Hello and welcome, or maybe it's welcome back. You've checked into the Newport Storytellers podcast, and we are so happy that you have. This is episode 5, the penultimate episode of a 6-part series of stories and music made possible by the support of Hobsons Bay City Council through its quick response grants. And I'm one of your hosts, Matt MacArthur, and I just got to say penultimate.
And I'm Jackie Kerrin, your other host. And Matt, I'm feeling miffed that I didn't get to say penultimate. But then again, I wrote the script, so I shouldn't really complain.
Exactly. So as far as complaints go, you don't have a case. And anyway, you gave yourself cornucopia in episode 4. So I think in the word department, we're square.
This is true. So let's get a wriggle on. For those of you who have chanced upon us, this podcast is an assemblage of stories and music from Newport, Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, west side of the Yarra River or Birrarung, the River of Mists.
Newport fosters a thriving community of musicians and storytellers who practice the art of the raconteur, the reciter of verse, the folk and fairy tale, or as we sometimes say, the said, not read, or the spoken word.
And over the years, we've recorded many of the storytellers, and in the light of our lives being so discombobulated, I couldn't resist slipping that one in, Matt, by COVID-19, it feels like the right time to release some of the tales into the universe. After all, we all love a story and a song. So, Matt, what's the plan for episode 5?
Jackie, the plan. The plan is beautiful in its simplicity. We shall create an entertaining and thoughtful audio adventure that will include 2 stories, and in between, our musical director Alan Davies has sent us a treat from the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club. And we hear a lullaby, recorded especially for us by Dharma Picking. But before we launch into it, in every episode we take a moment to explore something about Newport. And for this episode, I've decided it's trains.
Trains. Trains. Matt, the subject of trains is huge in this part of the world. We could talk about the Newport Railway Workshops, the Railway Museum, steam trains, freight trains, train stations, the substation, railway bridges, underpasses, overpasses. Did you have something particular in mind?
Well, it wasn't easy, but I've chosen to share a little about the Newport substation. It's big and it's so interesting.
Yeah. Look, I know I mentioned the substation in that list, but I'm not quite sure how it really relates to trains. How does the substation fit in with trains, Matt?
Bear with me, Jackie, and follow my drift.
Okay, Matt, give it to us. The Newport substation in a nutshell.
The Newport substation was built in 1915 by the Victorian Railways to convert 20,000-volt alternating current into the usable 1,500-volt direct current that's necessary to power Victoria's electric trains. It's one of the oldest substations on the metropolitan systems, and it's very big. Correction, it's very, very big, and sits proud at the junction of Melbourne Road and Mason Street. If you like brickwork, and who doesn't, it's a fine example of neoclassical industrial, and it's in exceptionally good nick. It was closed in 1969 and left to decay, but she sat there patiently, biding her time. And then, sometime around 1996, residents led by local glazier Darren Williams began the long process of restoration. The Newport Community Choir, their families and friends, recorded a song and video in support of the fundraising. And finally, the substation opened in 2008 as an arts centre. The Substation Arts Centre is synonymous with contemporary arts practice. With a variety of spaces, it functions as an art gallery and has several performance areas and studios. But the subby, as locals call it, is also home to Newport's annual Carols Night and a spectacular venue during the midwinter Newport Folk Festival. The subby is proudly cool, industrial chic, contemporary and global, and at the same time, responsive to the community that clusters around it. I don't think there's anything to compare it with, really.
Well, Matt, I think we can agree. She's an impressive bit of architecture, and she's ours. And now it's story time. What have you got for us?
Well, while having way too much fun rummaging in the audio archives, I found this story recorded in the Newport Community Hub in 2017. The storyteller is David Demant. David started off as a teacher of physics, electronics and computing in secondary schools in England, Canada, and Australia, and he was, for years, a senior curator of information and communication at Museum Victoria, and we usually get a glimpse of David's background in his stories. So we asked David to sum himself up. He quoted the Scientific American, July 1959. "I saw someone pursuing the horizon. You can never catch it," I cried. "You lie," they replied, and ran on.
I've been fascinated by the recent political changes that take, you know, Brexit, Donald Trump, the rise of right-wing groups in Europe, and the role of social media, and sort of been reading around that. Discovered that social media is quite old. So the Romans had this system of, they would pin up the minutes of the forum discussion every morning, the minutes of the previous day, and people would come along and copy them and send them. And they send them to someone who would then read them, copy them, change them, send them on, and they went round, and it was really like Facebook or whatever, like email. They were sending these texts around, changing them, changing their opinions, etc. And, you know, there's been all sorts of things like hacking has taken place. There was a book written in the 19th century in England called Love on the Wire, and it was about two telegraph operators who started an affair with each other across the wire, the telegraph, and one message that this one of the telegraph people sent was, "What can you describe how you see me?" And some other telegraph operator managed to hack into the thing and said, "You look like a hippopotamus." And, you know, so there's...
At least it wasn't a lazy telegraph operator, because hippopotamus is quite a long word to tap out.
That's true, actually.
Oh,
yes, exactly.
There was an introduction, a demonstration of radio in London, and someone set up a little transmitter down the road and broke into the exposition of the radio. So there's nothing really new under the sun, and a lot of people have been quite anxious about the change in social media, the death of the newspaper. And a large number of newspapers, you know, like Fairfax, Murdoch, whoever, have been systematically analysing what's happening to the paper media and trying to work out some way of retaining their profits and retaining their ideological hold, etc., etc. And so they do these systematic analysis, and one analysis was carried out by the Times newspaper in England, and it goes back quite a few hundred years, and they noticed that there's this one place in Siberia that has been ordering the Times ever since it was first published way back when. And this place, they started off by getting the newspaper sent to them, but when the airmail edition was introduced in the 20th century, they became airmail edition subscribers. And it's the one, only one person in the whole of Siberia was there. So they decided to find out what was going on with this person. What's going on? Why was he? So they found the person who subscribed to the airmail edition, which, by the way, is very light paper. It's incredibly light. they found this old gentleman in a cottage, and he had these piles of the airmail edition neatly stacked. And they asked him, you know, about his life and all that. And they said, "Well, why do you have the airmail edition?" He says, "Well, It's the softest paper.
I love David's sense of humour and his timing. He gives nothing away, takes you along with a totally believable, winding narrative, and then delivers the punchline. I have been caught repeatedly. Thank you. Thank you, David Demant.
So that's our cue. It's over to our musical man, Alan Davies, from the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club, whose task it is to showcase a club individual or band. Today's singer-songwriter is Simon Leviton. Simon has been a member of the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club since the early days, and is the leader of its popular Celtic session. At the 2014 Newport Folk Festival, he released his CD, It's About Time, which includes the song we're featuring today, titled Long Time Ago. Here's Simon in conversation with Alan. Alan began by asking Simon what inspired him to write the song.
Well, this song was written in the context of the CD that I put together. It's called It's About Time. And I guess in thinking about songs to put on the CD, yeah, I was starting to think about my own life and about the time that I've been playing and just since my childhood, really. So it was a bit of a retrospective like that in thinking about some of the key things that I've been involved with and bringing that across the years into the present with that final verse.
And what were some of those things in the past that that inspired you to write the song?
Well, and it's in the second third line, roaming the hillside full of laughter, full of joy. It's that time of growing up as a kid in New Zealand, actually. Quite a change for me coming from London as an immigrant family into Wellington, New Zealand, and the rolling hills and just the freedom. And yeah, it was such a magnificent way to be brought up. I'm drawn to those thoughts when I think about my childhood, and so I thought I'd include that in the song.
And the kind of driving rhythm of the song gives it a forward energy, and the next point that it moves to, you seem to be writing about a time when you were involved in activism and protests, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I guess that riff, and this is part of developing, you know, the synthesis of lyrics and the accompaniment, that sort of riff, that it's an A chord and I'm sort of picking on that A note and it goes from A to G. I guess that the intention was to add some tension to the song, and then there's reference in, I think, the second verse, peace, love, forgiveness was the mantra of our time, and that's really very out there in my memory of the time, the Bob Dylan time, the protest time, and I was really totally caught up in that swirl, and it was very formative for me as a musician, as a folk musician, and it always has been. So I bring that through into the last verse. Now that we're older and wiser than before, but we've got a long way to go. Reference to our environment and degradation of our environment. So those sort of causes have been with me for my whole life.
And in that third verse is where you kind of jump from reminiscing to, I guess, trying to give people a message about the future.
Yeah, we've got a long way to go. Killing our planet, murdering our soul. We do have a long way to go. And it's a thread that comes through a lot of my music. I always try to find something happy and nice and bucolic to sing about as well. So I'm not a burning, angry, fiery, radical 24/7, but certainly a lot of those sort of issues, a lot of those formative things in my early years are still as relevant today as they've always been. And yeah, I'm still passionate about them. Mm. So I guess this song tied together the early years and the current situation in a constant tension that runs through my life in many ways.
Don't you remember when you were a little boy? It was a long, long, long time ago. Roaming the hillside, full of laughter, full of joy. It was a long, long, long time ago. It was a long, 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 long. It was a long, long, long time ago. Peace, love, forgiveness was the mantra of our time. It was a long, long, long time ago. Marching for justice, and we held our heads high. It was a long, long, long time ago. It was a long, 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 long. It was a long, long, long time ago. Now that we're older, are we wiser than before? We've got a long, long, long way to go. Killing our planet like we're murdering our soul. We've got a long, long, long way to go. We've got a long, 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 long. We've got a long, long, long way to go. It's a long, 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 long. It's a long, long, long way to go. It was a long, 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 long. It was a long, long, long time ago. It was a long, 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 long. It was a long, long, long time ago.
That was Simon Levitin with his song, Long Time Ago. Please visit the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club website at nffc.org.au and go for a virtual wander. There's much to enjoy. It's never too late to learn an instrument or to sing or tell stories. And if doing these things is not your thing, the club welcomes volunteers and those who like to listen. So Jackie, story number two. What have you chosen?
Matt, Kate Lawrence has agreed for us to share one of her stories. Kate and I have had many story adventures together. She lives in Macedon and has helped me with the running of Stories by the Fire for the Newport Folk Club, and I've supported her with events in Woodend and Macedon. And together we held the executive roles of President and Vice President for Storytelling Australia Victoria for over 4 years. The story you're about to hear was recorded in the Newport Scout Hall, and I can't supply a date, but it was quite a few years ago. Kate begins by acknowledging the Gadabinard people, the traditional owners of the rainforest and coastline of the Otways. Now, she's asked me to apologise for her pronunciation because since this was recorded, there are now some wonderful websites to help us with the pronunciation of First Nation languages. One of the best, I think, is on the Museums Victoria website, and this also has links to the Victorian Aboriginal Corporation for Languages, or VACL, where there is so much more to learn. We've put a link on our podcast page for listeners to follow up. Enough of me. Let's hear Kate's story.
All right. Ready? On your marks?
Yep.
I might take this off. Okay, so the Gnubalud, and don't take my word on the pronunciation, lived for 60,000 years and worked and loved and ate and revered the mountains of the Otway Ranges and the sea all around there. But as we know, in 1788, white people came. First there were whalers and sealers, and they brought with them smallpox, and that killed a lot of the people. And then the settlers came, and there was war. There was war, and there was poisonings, and there was rape, and there was theft. And by the First World War, the people around those parts couldn't remember the Ngunnawal people at all. They were busy with a war on the other side of the world. And Jack Morris, he was in that war. And he came home with thousands and thousands of other soldiers, and they had nothing to do. They needed work. And there was this idea floating around about a road that would go from Geelong to Warrnambool, wrapping around those magnificent mountains. And the mayor of Geelong, Howard Hitchcock, he thought this was a great idea. It could be an enormous war memorial, the biggest war memorial in the world. And they would use the soldiers who had returned to build this road. And he had his eye on the prize, because he knew that this road was going to be stunningly beautiful and would attract visitors from all over the world. So Jack signed up. He was physically fit, and he passed, and he found himself at a camp at Reedy Creek. And the next day they took him. This Reedy Creek was between Eastern View and Lawn, and this was the section of road. And he was taken to the work on the road bit that was going towards Lawn. And he was given a pick, and he started. My God, it was hard work. Those rocks were hard and stubborn and sharp, and he would just be... There would just be this sound all day, chink, 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 as they hit those rocks. And in winter, when it was raining and the wind was sweeping off the ocean and they were ankle deep in mud, it was bitter, it was horrible, it was horrendous. But then in summer, when it was sparkling water, every so often Jack would stand up and he'd look out to the ocean and stretch, and he'd lean on his pick, and it was just, it would take his breath away. It was so beautiful. But the months went on, and the work was backbreaking, and Jack's body was becoming old before its time. Even though in the camp there was a mess tent, a piano, he was pretty good at singing, so on Sundays when they had a day off, he'd often end up around the piano singing, and they'd fish, and there was good camaraderie in the camps, but Jack, who was eating away at him, this work, this back-breaking work. His mate Dazzle would always say, "Ah, cheer up, mate, it's better than the war. We're not getting killed. We're not, no one's screaming. We're not trying to kill anyone. This is heaven." And that worked for a long time. But finally there was an opening in 1922, and Jack had been there for 3 years. And he went to the opening, but he was a bit bitter. And he would have thought there would be food at the opening. Anyway, Howard Hitchcock was up there in his three-piece suit and his pot belly and his fancy mayoral robes, and he was clearly the most important person up there. And Jack was watching him, and he just couldn't stop thinking about how good his life must be, how good it must be for him. And he just thought about it and thought about it. You know, his bed, that was the most thing he thought about, and his food and his family. And they went back to camp, and he just kept ruminating like a dog with a bone. Dazzle tried to cheer him up, didn't work, nothing worked. Well, a couple of years later, they're working another bit. They've done that bugger of a mountain, Mount Defiance, that bit of the road, and they're round on their way down to Wye River. And this was going to change everything. Now, Jack didn't hear the crunch of the wood on the rock, but he heard the blokes calling, "Chipper, ground," or whatever they might call. And he looked up, and there was this paddle steamer. It had "Casino" written on the outside, and it had its great hole in its hull, and it had run into a rock, and it was taking water. But it was shallow, and so there was no urgency, and they decided they would go out when the tide was out and get the cargo. So the first blokes that got out to the ship start yelling, "Yes, beers, beers, barrels of beers, just went through their bodies that they hadn't felt for a very long time. They bring in all the cargo. And the supervisors say, well, tomorrow will be a rest day. They had no control. It was a rest day for 2 weeks. They did not stop drinking until every drop was gone. Now, Jack, he liked to drink with the best of them, but he was not a very good drunk, and after 2 drinks, he just became the most maudlin, melancholy misery in camp, and he couldn't stop banging on about that Howard Hitchcock and his wife. Luckily, after 4 or 5 drinks, he would just keel over, and everybody else could get on with the party, and he'd be in this drunken slumber. So one night, Jack has a dream, and suddenly, he's at an opening, and guess what? He's got the mayoral gear on, he's got the three-piece suit, and he's cutting the ribbon. They're all looking at him, and they're clapping when he cuts the ribbon, and he's the most powerful person. But then he has to sit down, and there's more speeches, and it's a hot day, and he's feeling really good in his dream, but it's getting really hot, and he's starting to sweat, and he can't take anything off, and he thinks, Simon, he thinks, I'm not the most powerful here. That sun up there is the most powerful. I want to be the sun. All of a sudden, because it's a dream, he's the sun and he's beaming down on everyone and he's sort of frying them until this enormous cloud comes along and blocks out completely. He can't see the Otways, he can't see the people, he can't do anything. He's powerless. He thinks, and those clouds had started to rain, and so everyone was running everywhere, and they were the most powerful. So Jack says, I want to be the clouds. Instantly, he's the clouds, and he's just letting go and raining cats and dogs on everyone and everything, and he's having a ball because they're all getting soaking wet, until he feels himself being pushed and pushed and pushing. He's still raining, but he's raining now on the ocean. And that's no fun, because it's just water on water. No, that wind. That wind pushed him, and he says, look at that wind. That's the most powerful thing. I want to be the wind. All of a sudden, he is the wind. He just has to go, and people have to pull their coats across the trees, and everything's blowing everywhere. He rips doors off houses. He is just the most powerful thing around. But as he whips those waves up, he comes to the land and he hits the land and he has to go up and over. He has to go up and up and up and over that mountain. It's like, mountain, you're in my way. Mountain's not going to move. And he realises that mountain is the most powerful thing around. He says, I want to be the mountain. And he feels himself going deep into the earth and his shoulders broaden out and he's a mountain. Nothing's going to move him. Not the wind, not the sun, not the clouds. He is the most powerful thing around. Until he feels a little sort of tickle, a little niggle, a little sort of itch in his side, and he looks down and he hears this chink, chink, chink. There's all these stone cutters, and they're just gouging sides out of him, just ripping rocks out of the side of him. And he thinks, those stone cutters, they're the most powerful thing around. They're pulling apart the mountain. And with that, Jack woke up. And he was changed. He stayed and have any more drinks. And after that, when he went back to work, he'd steal a lot more looks at the ocean and he'd appreciate the sun and the wind and the mountain. And he's got to dreaming about all those people that would be coming down that road, all those little kids excited because it was going to be their beach holiday, and all those retired people going for a Sunday drive, and those visitors from overseas, they'd all be able to come and see this beautiful place that he could see every day. And Jack's generation had no idea about the Ganubanud. But we remember.
Thank you, Kate, for sharing. Matt, Kate's story is a blend of history and folktale, and I was curious to learn something about her process. When I contacted her for an interview, we were in the depths of winter and about halfway through the 2020 COVID lockdown, one of the longest in the world. Kate and I hooked up over Zoom, and after some fiddling with settings and Kate deciding she would sound better if she made a sound cave with her doona, we recorded the following. Hello, Kate. How are you?
I am excellent, Jackie. How are you?
I am excellent. It's a very windy day down here in Newport, but spring is on the way. What's it like up there at Macedon?
It's pretty good, although I am buried under a doona at the moment, so I can't see anything, but I think it's windy out there as well, and there's wattle.
I just love these DIY sound studios. Now, Kate, I want to talk to you about the story that we've just listened to. I think it's quite an extraordinary story, the way you have woven history, deep time, folktale, landscape, place. You've woven all these things into a story that touches our hearts, but also tells us a little bit about events of the past. I'm going to ask you, could you talk to us a little bit about how you arrived at this idea of blending true story, folk tale, and place?
I think it started when I was telling stories for the land care kids, or the land care class that the local primary school had, and I would do that on a weekly basis. And the environmental stories that I researched were all based in other places and had landscapes and animals and trees that were not relevant to these kids and where they were living. And so I started doing what storytellers have done for millennia, which is to take stories that I resonated with, that I liked, that had messages that I wanted to share, and set them in this place that kids could recognize and relate to. And I can't quite remember how I landed on the Great Ocean Road and the story of the stone cutter. I do have a long history with the Great Ocean Road and a great affinity and affection for it. And maybe I stumbled across, I think the history came first, actually. I think I stumbled across a bit of an understanding of how the road was built and the story that went on that. And then I thought I would take a folk tale and use that to give a story arc to what can be, you know, dry history. Yep, they built the road. It was a war memorial. It was tough. But this could give it a story focus. And then I found that other little gem of the running aground of the boat and all the alcohol. And so that enabled me to I just kept playing with it, just kept thinking how to fit the pieces together. And I think this is the first version of it, because I have told it since, and each time I've kind of tightened it and polished it and kept you know, the same elements. I'm very fond of the, you know, when he stands up and stretches and looks out to sea. I just have a really strong, you know, experience of doing that myself. Just really appreciating him doing that.
Well, it's a beautiful story, and it's the only story in this series of its kind. There are no other stories where the storyteller has woven together so many pieces to form a whole in this way. And I'd just like to thank you, Kate, for giving Matt and I permission to include it in the Newport Storytellers podcast. And
It's a great pleasure to have it there. And also, if I think about it, telling it in the old scout hall with the fire and the creaky, echoey, it was good.
Yeah, that scout hall's pretty special, isn't it? There can't be many of those scattered around metropolitan Melbourne, I don't think. We love it. Sometimes people who are visiting the area are a bit perplexed, but we love that old scout hall. And all the best to you up in Macedon, Kate, and we look forward to being on the other side of the pandemic when we can once again gather face to face. And now you can climb out from under your DIY sound studio / doona. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Jackie, the doona cave seems to be pretty effective. I might try that next time I'm recording in my lounge room. With the family and two cats all sharing the space, it can be hard to carve out a little privacy for recording.
And if it gets too stuffy, you can always use a snorkel. For those of you who don't know, Matt, as well as working on this podcast, he is a marine ecologist, aka Diver Matt, and snorkels and flippers are part of his casual day wear.
It's true, Jackie. I do consider them as basic essentials, but enough of my wardrobe. It's time for our lullaby. What have you chosen?
Turaluraluru. I had to read that very slowly. It's an Irish-American song. I have a bit of the Irish in me. It was written in 1913 by James Royce Shannon for a musical titled Shameen Do. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. It means black-haired Jimmy or dark Jimmy. I can find very little about the play other than it was a three-actor set in Kilcannon, Ireland in 1779. It opened on February the 2nd, 1914, and there were 32 performances. Bing Crosby recorded a version of Turaluraluru in the 1940s that sold over 1 million copies. Others to have recorded this song include Bobby Darin, Connie Francis, and Gene Autry. However, this is our very own Newport Fiddle and Folk Club songstress, Dharma Picking, singing it her way.
Three, four. Way down in Killarney, many years ago, me mother sang a song to me, tone so sweet and low. Simple Irish ditty in a quaint old Irish way. And I'd give the world if I could hear to sing this song today. Tooraloo-ra-loo-ra-i, tooraloo-ra-loo-ra-i, tooraloo-ra-loo-ra-i. Hush now, don't you cry. Turaluraluri, turaluraluri, turaluraluri. It's an Irish lullaby. Often dreams I wander to a cart again, with me mammy holding me as she did back then. Voice gently humming to me as in days of yore, when she would rock me fast asleep side the cabin door. Turaluraluri, turaluraluri, turaluraluri. Hush now, don't you cry. Turaluraluri, turaluraluri, it's an Irish lullaby.
Thank you, Dharma. One of the delights of creating this podcast has been your sound files landing in the inbox, each song so carefully rehearsed and recorded. For folk who would like to hear Bing's version, we've put a link on our podcast page, but I couldn't stop at one. I had to include the Irish tenors. Enjoy.
So this brings us to the end of episode 5 of the Newport Storytellers podcast. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to sharing more local stories and music next time. It's goodbye from me, Matt MacArthur.
And me, Jackie Caron. Matt and I acknowledge that recording and editing of this podcast has taken place on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unbroken connection to country that has long been mapped by story, song and dance, and we pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging, and to the elders of all nations, and to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders who've been listening to this podcast.
We thank the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club, under whose auspices we bloom, Hobson's Bay Library, and the Williamstown Literary Festival, who have made space for our voices, and all the storytellers and musicians who have given their permission for us to share their work. For more information on the music, the musicians, your hosts, me, Jackie and Alan, and the storytellers, visit our page on the Newport Fiddle and Folk Club website, nffc.org.au. The Newport Storytellers podcast is edited by me, Matt MacArthur. David DeMant's story was recorded by Alex Carnham and Kate Lawrence by me. Thank you Bruce Williams for our theme and Cameron Sharp for our graphic.
All the people in this podcast have contributed to events produced in Newport and the city of Hobsons Bay under the banners of Storytelling Australia Victoria and the Newport Fiddland Folk Club. Not all the storytellers live in the local area. Several travel from distant suburbs and even nearby regional towns to join us. Please, if you've enjoyed listening, spread the word. Stories and music are for sharing. Oh, so that's episode 5 done, Matt. Only one more to go.
Looking forward to it, Jackie. Every episode has been a blast.
True, 2020 was pretty bleak, but taking on this project with you and Alan has provided and continues to provide sunshine.
Oh, shucks.